The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. I will tell you, I am out in Connecticut. It is Fight Week. UFC, for the first time, is going to be on ESPN this Saturday as this card gets closer. I'm having less and less of a time forming an opinion between Cejudo and Dillashaw. Things seem to really be heating up. Look, what's a basic and lazy way to break down a fight? Okay, I hear it all the time, and to the point that it's nauseating and annoying, which is, if the fight can stay standing up, it will favor TJ Dillashaw, and if it goes to the ground, it will favor Henry Cejudo. But time and time again, we're shown that that isn't true, right? That was supposed to be the same storyline going into, say, Cormier versus Stipe. I tend to agree that TJ Dillashaw is a better fighter standing up, and I tend to agree that Henry Cejudo has an advantage in the wrestling department. But I don't know that breaking it down in those simple of terms does any of us any good. It just feels like a really lazy approach to things. And I'll tell you this as well. TJ gets a lot of credit because he's dynamic and he's flashy on his feet. Okay? A more blue-collared approach, a more workman-type style, like what you see out of Henry Cejudo, tends to get less credit for whatever reason. Even though we've seen that work time and time again, even though the great Mike Tyson stood in there and threw ones and twos and threes and uppercuts. So I'm not ready to concede because I don't know. I'm not ready to argue with it either. I just don't know who wins if they just go out and stand up. You would also look at somebody very dynamic like, say, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, who went in there, did a great job in the stand-up, but Cejudo defended himself just fine. And when Cejudo could constantly cause the threat of the takedown, sometimes scoring it and sometimes just causing a threat, it does change the stand-up realm. So I do happen to agree that TJ is going to have an advantage there. I also think that Henry is going to make a mistake, which is he's going to allow TJ a lot of minutes and opportunities on his feet that he doesn't have to. I think that Henry does have the ability to get many of his fights to the ground quicker and for more time than he does it. He likes to stand up and he likes to trade. And for reasons unknown, he doesn't always just grab his opponent and take them down or even try. So I think that you would have to look at TJ in that regard. I think that's a fair analysis. I just have to also add, I don't know if we've seen enough evidence to know that it's true. There always seems to be a nod that goes to the more flashy and dynamic guy. And TJ is definitely that. He will fight orthodox. He'll fight southpaw. He'll kick you. He'll punch you. He'll elbow you. He's moving his feet at all times. He just looks really good doing it. So if you don't always understand what it is you're seeing, you know that there is something going on with TJ. He is constantly setting the opponent up. Constantly. You can see it. You can see it from your living room. You can't always see fighters that do that. You can't always see their setups. With TJ, you can. You can see where he draws the line in the sand. You can see when he dips to the right, when he dips to the left, what he's looking for, changes his stance, circles out of it. There's just something special to watch. So in place of understanding, because we don't fully understand, he's such a rare talent. We don't fully understand what it is he's doing. We just keep seeing it work. So in place of our understanding, we put an interpretation that it's more effective than Cejudo, who's a little less dynamic, a little bit more of a Western boxer, going to use a little bit more of his hands, a little bit more of his head movement instead of footwork, instead of kicks, instead of spins, instead of these things that get oohs and ahs from the crowd. But I don't know that we've seen enough evidence from either one of them, purely in the stand-up realm, to just openly concede that TJ is better in the stand-up. The same thing goes for the wrestling. A lot of it is about range, and I understand that Henry Cejudo is the most decorated amateur wrestler in the sport, in front of Cormier, in front of Yoel Romero, in the entire sport, but it's about range, and it's about posture. When Henry was doing that in freestyle wrestling, just by example, he was bent over at the waist. He's in an upright posture. Things change drastically. That stance changes things. Your setups are now different. And I think that TJ has a great ability to control that range. the more range there is, the more distance. Let me explain why this is important whenever you hear about range. The more range there is and the more distance it is, the more time it takes to close that distance. So a guy that can do what we call get inside can always just change elevation and boom, the legs and hips are right there. Now a scramble is going to ensue. That doesn't ensure a takedown, but it sure does get you closer to that first step. A guy that doesn't control range as well has to now take his attacks from a little bit further out. And even though we're talking about milliseconds, that's the difference in a world championship contest like this. Head coach Roy Pittman used to always talk to the refs all the time. I heard him say this. And he would talk about a split second. He would talk about a millisecond. He would talk about a second, a half a second. He would say, if you don't think that's a long time, go home, turn your stove on until it's red hot, and then put your hand on it for a millisecond, and then tell me that a millisecond isn't a long time. And I get that point, and I get that metaphor, and that's why I offer it to you guys, so you can take that into consideration whenever you're talking about somebody that controls range really well. Not only does that mean that he can land his punches and kicks and he's not out there throwing air balls, but it also has to do with the fact that now his opponent has to operate from the grappling standpoint from further out, which takes more time. That also favors TJ. When you look at a competitive standpoint, the intangibles, the pace, the ability to go out there and bring your skills with you, to put it on the line when the crowd is watching and to adapt accordingly. This thing's a wash for me. I don't know who a better competitor is. For sure, Henry Cejudo gets a check in that department. For sure. Won the Olympic Games. Won a world championship. For sure he does. But I think that Dillashaw does too. I've never seen Dillashaw back down. And I've seen him in trouble. When you have a guy who's really good, and TJ's really good, he's a great athlete. He's a special talent. He's dynamic. He's in good shape. He's fast. Those things are natural. When you have a guy who's really good, that's enough. If you are just better than everybody else, you can go win championships. If you're not, you have to rely on toughness. And if you are tougher than everybody else, you can also win championships. It's very rare that a guy is both. I would offer to you that John Jones, by example, is both. I would offer to you that TJ Dillashaw is both. I have seen him knocked down. I saw him get his ass up off the canvas and win a world championship. Go to the corner and recover. I have seen him with black eyes. I have seen him with broken noses. I have seen him with a broken hand have to dig deep. No longer be able to rely just on his skill and his speed and his athleticism. Have to dig, find that heart and that grit and that dog and that toughness, and I've seen him pass that test. I tend to lean towards TJ Dillashaw in this fight. I also think that size is relevant in this case, and I think that favors TJ Dillashaw. I think there is an inaccurate narrative going on, and I offer this for the bettors. For any of you that go out there and park with your money as a way of enjoying and being part of the excitement, I want to make sure that I give you a very good analysis. But there is a dialogue going on. The weight cut is going to hurt TJ Dillashaw. We have not seen that, guys. We just keep hearing about that. Time and time again, this keeps coming up, and we keep hearing about that when a person has a bad weight cut. I don't know where that started. That is a crutch. That is a way out. And that is false on a 24-hour weigh-in, which is what these guys have. They will weigh in on Friday. TJ will be hurting very badly. By Friday night, TJ will be ready to fight. Guess what? He doesn't have to. By Saturday morning, TJ will be more than ready to fight, but guess what? He doesn't have to. By Saturday afternoon, that weight cut is a distant memory. He will be at 100% and can fight, but guess what? He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to fight until Saturday night. We just saw this as recently as Max Holloway, who has a very hard weight cut. We just saw it as recently as Khabib Nurmagomedov against Conor McGregor, who has a very, very hard weight cut. We saw that in all of Conor McGregor's fights, where he did it at 145 pounds, where he was hurting very badly at the time of the scale. Because that is the last visual memory that you have of that athlete, you tend to then carry that with you, that's what he's taking into the ring. I can tell you a 24-hour weigh-in is a ridiculously long amount of time to recover. In amateur wrestling, they have 1 hour. They weigh in at 4 o'clock. They are on the mat at 5 o'clock. If they weigh in at 8 a.m., they are on the mat at 9 a.m. a 24-hour weigh-in is enough time to recover. I just offer that to you because I do continually hear that. Well, TJ, is this weight cut going to hurt you? I followed TJ's college wrestling career. He did it at 125 pounds. He did some of it at 133 pounds. I can just tell you, at 125 pounds or 133 pounds, he moves very well. A lot of you aren't armed with that. I'm just offering you that. You put your money where you want. You argue with your friends however you want to. Just don't let that weight influence you negatively. I think you might be right to let it positively influence you towards TJ. He may get in the ring with a little bit of size. He may also be a little bit faster than you guys are used to seeing him, which is a very scary thought. Very scary thought that TJ Dillashaw might be faster. He also may have a better pace and better conditioning. There is a byproduct of having to cut weight that forces you into a better shape. Part of cutting weight is the diet, sure it is, but it's also extra cardio. It's also running a little bit more, picking up that extra run after your workouts for the day. And that's the things that TJ would have had to have done to get down to this weight class. So I do think that it's very reasonable and logical that he comes in an even better shape and better condition. I do think he will be frustrated. I do think he's going to lose moments of this fight for sure. I do think that Henry's going to get his hands on that at some point, get him down and start to control him. I just don't think that mentally TJ Dillashaw will check out. We just haven't seen anything in his past that would tell you that something could frustrate him and make him quit and make him go away. And that's really what this is about all about. As sports commentators, we never present that side to the audience. All we do is present that, well, this guy's got the reach and this guy's got some speed. And then we talk about the guy's accomplishments. Well, this guy won a world championship. Well, this guy won a world championship and an Olympic championship. And we start comparing them on paper. And we do that because it's simple and it's easy and it's relatable. But as an athlete, I will tell you, this is about breaking the other guy's will. This is a battle of spirits. Who can take the other guy's spirit? Both of the guys are hungry going in. Who can change the guy's mind in the course of battle and make him think, you know what, I really don't want it that bad. Thought I wanted it, it turns out that I don't. Turns out this guy wants it more than me. If you can only make him think that and lose his composure and doubt himself and give up for 1 second, in this kind of sport, you win the contest. It's different than other sports. In other sports, you can have bad moments. You can have bad plays. You can call timeout. You can get taken out. The coach can call timeout for you and pull you out. The offense goes in. The defense goes in. You got to recollect yourself. In this sport, it's very different. You don't get to do that. If you lose your composure at any time during the battle, absent of in between rounds, you are going to lose the contest. I haven't seen that in TJ Dillashaw. And I think that Henry Cejudo is going to have to put him in positions that we haven't seen before and frustrate him to an ability that we just haven't seen before. So how do you hedge a bet on that? How do you bet against something that you have yet to see before? Which is what I think makes this sport and this fight in particular very compelling. The other side of it, okay? That's the TJ Dillashaw. I'm leaning towards TJ Dillashaw, but I have to say to you in fairness that Henry Cejudo has done nothing but get better. And the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about, and even though everybody acts like TJ Dillashaw is this big dick, he's not. He's actually the opposite. TJ's actually a very nice guy. And it just doesn't come off that way all the time for the fans, and now he's endearing it and embracing it and wearing snake t-shirts himself and going along with it, which I think is very smart and very wise. But I don't know that TJ gets the credit for actually being a sportsman and being a really nice guy. And one of the things that has happened here is TJ's former teammate, Joseph Benavides, who he trained with every single day, and who Joseph will openly tell you was a lot for Joseph to deal with. TJ will never speak on that. Joseph will come out and say that. Joseph fought Henry, and Joseph beat him. And I think when you have that common opponent, even if it's a practice room partner versus competition, if that's as close as you can get, then that's what you've got to go off. But when Joseph comes out and goes, look, I felt them both, and I tend to lean towards TJ Dillashaw, I think that it's really relevant. The point that I would like to make for you, though, if you go and watch Henry Cejudo's career from the time he fought Demetrius Johnson the first time to the way he not only closed that gap but overcame it in the second fight to even the time when he met Joseph Benavides, it was very young in his career. Cejudo is young in his career right now. He may be the world champion right now. He may be in a main event super fight right now. He may be an Olympic champion right now. He's still young in his career. The way that he's growing and evolving is very relevant to the Henry Cejudo story, particularly if you're trying to make your pick for this weekend. and why the evidence that we've seen in the past may lead us towards TJ Dillashaw, myself included. You have to take into account the strides and the gains that he's making. I don't think that we've seen the best Henry Cejudo. In fact, I know that we have not. I'm very confident telling you we have not. The Henry Cejudo that we saw beat Demetrius Johnson, I do not believe could beat the Henry Cejudo that's going to be in there with TJ Dillashaw. The Henry Cejudo that fought Joseph Benavidez, I do not believe could beat the Henry Cejudo that's going to be in there Saturday night against TJ Dillashaw. He's one of those guys that keeps stepping up and evolving. You can even see that. Israel Adesanya, I'm very big on him, and I'm very big on his skills and abilities, and I'm very into his fight coming up with Anderson Silva for multiple reasons. But the thing with Israel Adesanya that impresses me the most is the gaps and the gains and the leaps that he's taking in this sport in between fights. As good as he looked on the Contender Series was nothing in comparison to how he looked in his UFC debut. His fight with Brad was nothing in comparison to how he looked against Derek Brunson. It's the steps and the leaps in between time, and that is what is so hard to gauge. And that is what is on Henry's side. You could take the best Henry that you ever saw, which I imagine you would say was Henry versus Demetrius Johnson. I think you would be right to do that. I just also think that you're right if you were to assume there's going to be an even better Henry. And a year from now, an even better Henry. Is that Henry enough to bring down TJ Dillashaw? I do not know the answer to that. I won't make believe that I do. But that's one of the obstacles that you have if you're TJ, if you're in the TJ camp, or if you're TJ's trainer in Dwayne Ludwig, is you don't fully know what Cejudo's going to do or how well he's going to do it. You just know if you follow his career, he's going to do it better this time than he did last time.
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
The big game is around the corner.
Every single team that is suiting up for this weekend, putting a helmet on, putting the cleats on, has a 3-game win streak left in them right now.
Check out The Rich Eisen Show on Podcast One Sportsnet as the legendary sportscaster analyzes the plays and predicts what will happen on February 3rd.
Almost a quarter century of covering NFL playoffs, I cannot recall a more wide open field.
Download The Rich Eisen Show every weekday on Podcast One Sportsnet or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Power, speed, and a clash of styles will be on display when two of boxing's most explosive punchers go toe-to-toe for the welterweight world title this Saturday night. Boxing's only 8-division world champion Manny Pacquiao returns to the U.S. to defend his title in his first fight in more than 2 years, and he's taken on former 4-division world champion and must-see attraction, Adrian the Problem Broner, one of boxing's most talented fighters. Broner is aiming for a career-defining win against future Hall of Famer Manny Pacquiao and is looking to reign in as the welterweight world champion. Pacquiao, the second biggest pay-per-view draw in boxing history, is squaring off against Broner, one of the perennial top draws, both box office and viewership. You just know that it doesn't get any bigger than this. Get ready for explosive action from bell to bell this Saturday night, January 19th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, live on pay-per-view.
Now, back to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
So, Stipe Miocic. Stipe has been so stubborn. Oh my gosh, has he been stubborn. Ever since he lost his championship to Daniel Cormier, he has been so stubborn that that is the fight that he wants next, that is the fight he deserves next, and that is the fight he's going to do next. I think he's gaining traction with that. I don't think any of us disagreed with him the first time. We just know the sport and the industry and the business well enough to know it doesn't work that way. You just simply don't get what you want. If you lost, regardless of the circumstances, there's going to be a new pecking order. You watch that contest. Daniel Cormier is now going in there with Brock Lesnar, if we're led to believe what we were told. In addition to all these other things, now you got Jon Jones back. You got that mega fight. Okay, Jon Jones is now busy with Anthony Smith. What's Cormier going to do next? Is his expiration date of March 6th accurate? And if so, where does that leave Stipe? And you got all these different things, and all you can do is try to guess. I don't want a back and forth with you guys on the fact that fighters change their mind all the time. I get it, I concede, and I'm fully aware. I don't want a back and forth that fighters go as far as to retire and then come out of retirement. I get it. I concede and I'm fully aware. But let's do the best we can here, which is to operate within the information that we have been given. Daniel Cormier says, I am out of this sport on March 6th. I have privately spoken to Daniel Cormier. I have publicly spoken to Daniel Cormier. I know a worker when I'm dealing with one. And I know a guy that is shooting. Daniel Cormier, at least in his heart and in his mind, is fully sincere and resigned to the fact that he will exit this sport on March 6th. Fully. Before you get into it, yeah, you can be talked out of it and wait till Dana brings it. I get the whole thing. But this is sincere and this is not a negotiation. And if you're planning an industry, you're planning a division, you're planning a championship, you're planning a storyline around those facts, I think that lends well to Stipe. I do not know what's going to happen with Brock. I tend to think that Brock is coming back. But we were also led to believe that Brock would be coming back and fighting Daniel Cormier in the early parts of 2019. We are now in the early parts of 2019 and no announcement has been made. Unless an announcement comes and the mega show that's coming up this weekend on ESPN, I think that that even gets less likely for Brock versus Daniel in conjunction with March 6th. Let's take Brock out of the equation. Even if that fight happens, I don't think that you can plan that Brock is going to win. Even if Brock does win and you want to argue with me, I don't think that you can plan that Brock is going to come back and defend that and carry the company into the immediate future. So in the absence of Daniel Cormier, when you need a marketable box office star to have your belt and move forward that also has the resume behind him that deserves the opportunity to be in there, I think it lends very well to the case being made by Stipe Miocic. I don't think anybody has ever argued one of the facts with Stipe. When Stipe lays his case out, logically, like you would in a court of law, the jury comes in and they side with Stipe every time. Hey, I was the longest reigning champion ever. Hey, I did all the things you wanted me to do. Hey, I put it on the line against Daniel Cormier. Hey, it didn't work out, but guess what? I'm still the number one contender, and I've beaten everybody in front of me, and nobody can disagree with that. Yeah, boop, Stipe. Stipe wins. No argument. If you start to then look at some of the intangibles, such as, is there a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity from a business standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, from a fan standpoint, from a company standpoint, from a PR standpoint, from a press standpoint, of putting Brock Lesnar in there? Yes, there is. There absolutely is. If you start to take Brock out of the equation, and I really think that's the only thing missing at this point between seeing Daniel Cormier standing across from Stipe Miocic Part 2, I really think the only thing that we're missing is the answer from Brock. I cannot suggest for you a heavyweight that could possibly fit the requirements, both in the rankings and in the mandate of the masses, in front of Stipe. I'm making that statement to you guys, but I'm also asking you a question. Do you guys disagree with me? Tell me. Is there a fight you'd rather see Daniel in? And don't bring John Jones to the table. John Jones has a dance partner. If Brock is out, isn't it Stipe? Am I wrong? Am I missing something? Verdum's out. Kane isn't going to fight him. I don't think Ngannou versus Daniel, even if Ngannou got over on Kane, and I could be wrong, if he got over on Kane, perhaps that would change things very quickly. I don't think any of them are more compelling or frankly even close to Stipe. I thought that Stipe was playing his cards wrong at the beginning of this. He is winning me over. I think that as time goes on, that generally, historically, hurts an athlete. That hurts an athlete's case. If an athlete wants an immediate rematch and they aren't granted one immediately, that is the sign to elect yourself mayor of Get the Hintville, and it's not coming. I think that time has favored Stipe. Rarely. This doesn't usually happen, but I could not begin to make a compelling argument to you for who else Daniel would go against. And now the question comes, can he get it done by March 6th? What would happen in a scenario, and I don't know the answer to this, what would happen in a scenario where Daniel Cormier doesn't get any fight booked prior to March 6th? Daniel Cormier had two stipulations. First off, I'm going to fight Brock Lesnar next. And second off, I'm going to be done by March 6th. But they were in that order. The stipulations were in that order. So what if he does not get the Brock fight? And then secondly, what if he doesn't get any fight? Does all of a sudden March 6th come and go and Daniel go, well, I guess I'm done. I gave the light heavyweight belt back and I'm giving up the heavyweight belt. And I don't think so. That's never what he said and that's never what he meant. He has always said, I will do one more. He even went even further when the John Jones came back and got licensed and that dialogue began to start to go, okay, fine, we'll do John Jones. He was never picky on the opponent. It started with Brock, but he did go, okay, well, I guess we'll do John Jones. Would that now go a third time to Stipe? And then comes the question, what if even with Stipe, they don't have a date booked and get that thing done by March 6th? So now he's going to fight Brock or Daniel, or in this case, Stipe, in May. Well, then, do you just say to hell with the whole thing? You've now missed the March 6th deadline, but you did want to have one last fight. You wanted to go out your way. By all means, you've got every right to do that. Let's not take that from the guy. After all he did for the sport, after all he did for the fans, let's not take that opportunity from him. So then you just throw the whole damn deal out. Okay, deal didn't work. Didn't go the way I wanted. Here we are. Here we are in May. Fill in my opponent, whoever that may be. But we missed the March 6th. So let's just make it March 6th of 2020. Is that the way it goes? Maybe. That'd make a level of sense with me. I'd be okay with that. But I do think as time has gone by, whatever the cracks in the armor of the Brock Lesnar versus Daniel is, I don't know that backstory, though I do feel there is one. And unless we get an announcement, and I mean imminent, I'm talking about notwithstanding Saturday. We do not see an announcement Saturday of Brock versus Daniel. We might just have to move on from that. And we can't do Daniel versus Jones. He's busy. And I think that does bring us back to Daniel versus Stipe with only one question left, which is what's the date? You like saving cash, right? You know what's even better? Saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. Well, if that is in your bag, then get this, because you can do it right from your living room. All you have to do is go to geico.com and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket, it just might be the most rewarding thing you do today. Guys, I will tell you, for us amateur wrestling fans out there, I don't know if there's been a better time to be a fan. Nick Gizwowski just got back, he took out everybody, but one of them included a junior world champion from Russia, went undefeated overseas, representing the country very well. I think one of the best storylines in all of wrestling, which infuriates me that this isn't told. When I go to flowwrestling.com, when I go to themat.com, when I listen to Christian and Willie, they shouldn't be talking ever without bringing up Zahid Valencia and Mark Hall. That story should be told top of the page every single week. Biggest rivalry in wrestling, and it's happening right now. Ever been as relevant as Bannock versus Schultz, and it's happening right now. Two NCAA champions are in the same weight class. Two world medalists are in the same weight class, and they're there by choice. Either one of them could go up or down and be favored to win a national championship. By choice, neither one is flinching. Neither one is backing down. Same as Dake versus Taylor. Same as Howe versus Perry. Same as Bannock versus Schultz. Neither one will back down or flinch. And it's happening right now. It is at a collision course headed for March. And I do not know how the lack of appreciation, and everybody that I just mentioned, before I got to hear from Piles, just so you know, I know that everybody is on board with that, but we are not building this to what it should be. Quiz versus Schneider, we all stopped what we were doing at 12:01 a.m. on New Year's. I remember where I was when Coach Ryan sent out a tweet, Kyle Schneider's red shirt is being pulled and he is now in the heavyweight division. The world champion is now coming after the two-time defending national champion, and all hell broke loose. And it was arguably the greatest time in the history of my life as a wrestling fan. And we had 4 months to look forward to it. And it went down as the highest rated wrestling match in the history of wrestling, and it was aired live on ESPN. In many ways, that is what is happening right now with Zahid and with Mark Hall. The lack of appreciation has come because we've seen the match before, because these guys have a past. So what? Who gives a damn? They're going into the rubber match. They've both beaten each other. They both got national championship. They both got world medals. And only one of them's going to be at the top of the podium by the end of the season. There was a big story over the weekend with Fix and Suriano, which turned into a total mess. And the only part of the story that I did not like was what bad officiating we had. That is not what I saw. I did not see bad officiating in that match. I saw referees that were put in a tough spot. They took the time, they deliberated, and they called the rules accurately as the rules are written. I did not see bad officiating there. I do not know where that came from. And I offer that because so much of this is public opinion. So much is public opinion, and it gets told the wrong way. There was a referee. There was a wrestling match. This made national news. This poor referee. They called him a racist. The referee was doing a match in, I believe it was New Jersey, and he had an athlete, and the athlete had to cut his hair. And there's a rule in wrestling about your hair, and it doesn't just extend to the hair on your head. There's actually a facial hair rule as well. I think the facial hair rule, without quoting, but I'm very close, if not fully accurate, I think it's 2 weeks. I don't have any idea how you determine by looking at a guy if he has a two-week beard. I don't have the foggiest idea, but I believe that, I think the rule actually says that. Point being, if he has 2 weeks of growth, then his face will be soft. So if he's to rub that on his opponent, it will be soft. If it's less than 2 weeks, if it's a two-day, by example, it'll be rough and he could somehow weaponize his beard. I don't agree with that. I think it's, one's got nothing to do with the other. That's on the books. There's also a hair length rule. In my life of wrestling, I've only seen that done one time. Guess what? How's this for a memory? This will impress my former teammates. I was in Wood Middle School. I was in seventh grade, trying to think of the referee. Mike Haluska. Mike Haluska was the referee. How's that for a memory? Oh my God. I'm so impressed with myself. Mike Haluska made Jeremy Pentagraph, who was my teammate, year older. He was in eighth grade. I was in seventh grade. He made Jeremy Pentagraph cut his hair. Jeremy Pentagraph did not have an ability to cut his hair. And if he didn't cut it, he could not wrestle and we'd have to forfeit the weight class. Rocky Saggers, who was the coach at the time, had to grab a pair of scissors and he had to give Jeremy Pentagraph the worst haircut in the history of haircuts. And Jeremy Pentagraph was the cool kid in school. Jeremy Pentagraph always looked good. He didn't have some goofy hairdo. He was the guy who you wanted to look like, Jeremy. Now all of a sudden he's got this ridiculous hairdo because Coach Saggers had to grab a pair of scissors, cut his hair. But it was the rule. Only time I've ever seen it applied. That's why I remember this so well. But I know that there is a rule, even if I can't perfectly cite it for you guys, there is a rule on the book about the length of hair, and that also extends to your face. And the referee had this kid cut his hair. And that ref, oh my God, they don't want him to ever ref again. It was terrible. I felt so bad for the guy. I felt so bad for him because he didn't make up the rule. It was just the rule. And he had to enforce it. And referee, these guys aren't paid anything. These guys don't even get... You hear the term gas money. They don't even get gas money. I believe a referee is paid. In some jurisdictions, it's $40. And some, it's up to $75. He's got to work the whole night. Everybody boos him. Everybody hates him. And it's for a loss. And in this case, he's got to interpretate a rule that somebody else wrote down that goes back. I don't know how far it goes back, but I can tell you a memory of my own that goes back to when I was in the seventh grade. Rocky Saggers had to get a pair of scissors and make the kid, a cool kid in the school, look like a fool until he could get to a barber. I'm just saying, I know that's a rule. It's a rule. I don't know if that ref has ever refed again. I thought that was a very unfair treatment of a guy who's trying to apply the rule. And I don't want that to happen to the NCAA referees. And even though these comparisons aren't the same, where one guy was called as this disgusting term, call him a racist, this poor guy. And these other guys were just called incompetent. That's just not what I saw. They called that rule correctly. They called the locking hands. They called when they started in referee's position as opposed to neutral. And they called the hand to the face the way that the authorities wrote it down. I had the same interpretation and the same impression as the referees. They needed a little more time to look at the film, review it a couple of times, different angles, discuss and deliberate. That's true, but there's nothing in the rules against that. So what, they took a little time to get it right? People are going to come down on these poor guys? Don't want them to officiate matches anymore? I don't know about that. I do know about that. I know very clearly about that. That's wrong. Those guys did it right. They put up with the turmoil. They looked at the different views. They talked it over, and they came to the right conclusion. And they didn't get anything for it. They just did it for the love of the sport. They should not have that taken from them if we as wrestling fans didn't like the conclusion that they came to through the accurate interpretation of the rules. I ask that you give that some consideration. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, or that mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, at least you can find out what your car is worth. when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then just answer a few questions, navigation, moonroof, high mileage. You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you'll know how much of a hit it's going to be so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent to you in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. When you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your vehicle, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer is not available in all areas. Guys, I've had it with you all, but I do look forward to talking to you again on Friday. So until Friday, I am Chael Sonnen. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Laura Ingraham, and this January I am launching my new show, The Laura Ingraham Show Podcast, exclusively on Podcast One. So if you like my radio show, you're going to love joining me during the week as I cover politics, pop culture, and media bias. And don't worry, as always, I'm going to bring you hard-hitting guests and take your calls. Subscribe today and download new episodes starting January exclusively on podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.